Good morning from the Explicit Measures podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. We almost didn't make it, but we got it figured out. Little technical difficulties this morning, trying to get the stream up and fluid this morning with less issues than before. Sorry for those of you who joined earlier. We actually had to start a new stream for this, so it was actually clear and up to speed now. So it should be much easier to watch. No stuttering this time. We'll give it a whirl. Good morning, gentlemen. How's it going? Welcome back to the week after a long weekend.
Good morning, Mr. Mike. Happy Tuesday.
There it is.
Happy Tuesday. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just replying back to everyone with a new link that I just
Tommy is
out that
Tommy is feverishly typing to everyone to apologize for Mike's. I don't know what was going. This is the same way I've been using the program for weeks, and all of a sudden it decided something on our streaming side must have updated because, it just wasn't sending it's out
like,
good data.
It's like resting a piece of machinery for a long time. The fluids start to settle in places you don't want to. You know, like it's gotta.
It's weird how that works.
Gotta get the mojo back.
I know. We're getting back into the groove of things. So with this,
for the holiday break.
Yes, exactly. It's coming back. It's kind of getting back from the holiday break. Exactly. So I got an intro or opener today. Actually, two things that are kind of relevant today. So one of our buddies, and we know Greg Baldini from just being around the internet, and Greg is a good guy. He knows a lot of things about tabular models.
A very big community
guy. If you know him around the community, it's community.powerbi.com. Yep. He's on there giving amazing answers, and we were able to lure him in to writing a blog article on Power BI tips. So it's out there. It's out now. It's incredible. His detailed explanation and understanding of the topic is literally second to none. It's really good. So worth a read. You might have to read it twice. It's deep. It's got good stuff in it. But for those of you who want to understand DAX, it's a good article.
He's also one of those guys, kind of like the Italians.
That
if you have a chance to go see or speak or hear him talk, it's
100%.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Yes,
it's just fun.
And he's got a sense of humor with it. And you read the article. There's a couple little phrases he throws in there that are like, oh, that's a good bit of dry humor. And I like how you put that in there. It tickles the humor part of me like the right way. It's like, oh yeah, this is good joking.
Greg is actually probably the first person I saw at a conference where I said, oh, this could be like someone's doing it fun and it's funny. And this is also amazing. He was probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like one of the best.
Great speaker.
Love it. So I do have another quite an interesting opener here. I do want to point out I don't know when this came out per se, but I know it's out now. The Tabular Editor 3 came out with a new feature for debug mode. And when you use this, it puts the commas of your statements in DAX at the front of the line as opposed to the end of the line. And I threw out a survey on LinkedIn. I'm a big fan. I read an article. So let me preface this with a little bit of background. I read an article, I don't know, back in 2020, 2019, really early. It was kind of early on. And I was like, man, I just can't write SQL code very well. And I keep making mistakes all the time. And then I started putting the commas at the front end of the sentence because I felt like I was writing better code. I was able to, you know, write a commented list of columns, you know, select from. And then if I put the comma at the front end of it, it was actually, I was making less mistakes. At least I felt that way. But I didn't have any data to back it up. So I told Seth about this. Seth's like, what are you doing? Why are you writing your code so stupid? Like, of course everyone knows the commas in SQL go at the back. And I'm like, I don't know, man. It just feels like right to me. So then became the challenge of, well, I got to go to the internet and see if who else is thinking the same way that I am. Maybe there's one other person out there who likes what I'm doing. Well, I found an article that I'll actually link here in the study. It's a study from 2017 where people looked at a bunch of code and then tried to execute that code to see if it was syntactically correct across GitHub or something like that. I think they looked at I don't know. I thought it was a couple terabytes of code that they were looking at, hundreds or not thousands of repos. And lo and behold, the people that were writing better code had commas at the front of the line. So I'm very happy for Tabular Editor to bring in this debug mode to put the commas at the front of the statement. I think it's a good assistance for people to write better code. Reactions?
Well, first, it's not, it's not implemented system wide. It's just some queries, not necessarily like when you're actually writing a new like a formula.
Well, so it's like if you enter something, right? So if you're in tabular editor, right, and you
if you're in the queries,
So if you make a calculate statement, you'll have multiple parameters, and you have the calculate statement and the other two, you know, filter sections at the end of it, right? What you can do now is when you do the auto formatting, when it will auto format, it'll automatically move the commas instead of the comma at the end of the line for the calculate statement. It'll shift all the lines down so that each of the commas start at the beginning of the line.
Man, the only way I found that working was with queries, not necessarily with like writing a new measure.
Oh yeah, it works in measures.
Oh man.
Even in the functions. Like if you write a function that has multiple parameters and you like shift return and hit multiple lines, you can do that and the commas should come forward toward the front side. It still works.
I'm all for that. But
so I like, Mike, that you're just trying to enforce your theories by reinforcing them with blog posts from Medium, but
it's a study.
There's a study in there, right? And in both actually was the highest level of success.
True.
Where you found both of them, which is actually ironic, seeing how you wouldn't want both those things, because it kind of creates a disjointed reading experience from SQL. Now, I'm not going to play the I'm old school SQL guy, like this is the way
but you are
do things. But I like that's the bent, right? Like that's where I come from. So it's like I'm a comma after guy because that's just syntax.
That's how you learned it.
The way I learned it.
Yep.
Unfortunately, you know, putting commas before things doesn't fix your issues writing SQL code.
No, it doesn't make you a better SQL code writer. But hopefully it gives you those couple times when you forget it.
I did find an interesting bit in the article that would be a valid reason for adopting that new strategy is using or having that SQL code run in different types of systems. Right?
Oh, that's true.
I think that's what it mentioned, which was in some cases where, like, I think about in Databricks, you know, we have a Scala section that executes a SQL. Bit of SQL code, right? Like in scenarios, if that's what that was outlining, like, hey, you can run SQL code and some things can parse that and run it appropriately, others can't unless you do comma whatever. Like, okay, fine, like it's a change thing,
right? Yeah,
from it's one of those preference things until it's not, you know. If a machine is, now that we're cross-functional with a lot of languages, and there's a hard reason to change, I'll jump on Team Mike.
And I'm not trying to push everyone the same way. I'm observationally saying, like, when I look at the tools, like you install the new version of SSMS. Any auto, like if you script a select 100 from the SSMS, you'll now see the commas all come in the front. So I think there's kind of a general shift of like, oh, that makes it a little bit easier for us to not. I just added a new line or I deleted a line and I forgot the comma at the end of the line. And I always did that. That was just like my biggest pet peeve. I was like, oh man, I had another column and I forgot the comma again.
I would say, you know, like in general, I'm probably already leaning that way. If I'm outside of SSMS for sure, because some of the tooling just doesn't show you the error. Like where it is.
Where, what,
right?
What line, so, yeah, so what line, what row.
Decreasing the amount of issues, especially when you're hitting execute, like in Databricks, it's like, just forget about it. Like you're not going to get
forget about it.
a valid error that's going to be like, hey, syntactically, you forgot a comma.
Exactly.
So it's cleaner. It's easier to find issues when you're selecting columns. So I get it. It's a good one, Mike.
It's okay. I'll just bring that up there. I just thought that was an interesting. I'm very thank you, Daniel, for making Tabular Editor with this option. I really like the option, and it is an option. You don't have to turn it on, so you can leave it the way it is.
Cool, though.
But I will. I think it's good. Anyways, today's topic, and this kind of fits very well with today's topic. I think in general, we're talking about DAX, DAX statements, writing code. Today's topic is an article from SQL BI, which I think is absolutely incredible. Again, we love the Italians. Marco and Alberto from SQL BI, incredible knowledge base. You guys have been in this space forever. We love the content you come out with. And I swear, every time I read an article from them, I have to read it at least three times. And I have to read like half of it and then like take a nap and come back and read the second half of it because it's dense. It's got a lot of rich stuff in it. But today we're going to talk around SQL's BI, Seven Reasons Dax Is Not Easy, which I think is a very relevant topic in general, especially for people who have just started Dax or who are joining that new area or learning that thing from the business realm. So I'll kick it off there. Seth, what do you think? I'll kick it over to you first. Some of the reasoning, some of the seven reasons here. Maybe we should, I don't know, maybe go through all seven first, or do you want to go through one at a time? How do you want to do this?
Well, I'll give some color and maybe,
color it up.
You have a preference how we go through it.
Here's the crayons.
This is a perfect example of like a relevant topic a year later, right? Mm-hmm. Like this was written a while ago.
Yeah.
2020.
Always right? relevant.
If you're a new user, like a newer getting into DAX a little bit, like this one forces you to do what you should on SQL BI, which is go to their articles and blogs and scroll all the way to the bottom first and then work your way up.
Yes, exactly.
It's going to be a fun conversation. I think it's fun. It's great in the context of setting up all of the different parts of DAX that are a struggle for people.
Yes.
And I think the conversation today is going to be interesting because it shines a spotlight on the particular areas and I think brings some clarity around those struggle points that could help end users like sort out in the mess of them trying to figure out DAX why they're having problems with it because
totally agree.
It behaves differently. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be a fun conversation.
And Seth, to your point, I completely agree with making sure you do scroll from the bottom first, because if you actually look at the latest SQL BI articles, their titles are all better than my thesis title in college. So analyzing the parallelism of storage engine operations. What is the next one? Different options to many model, many to many relationships in Tabular. These are all amazingly good titled, but also if you are just beginning to work in DAX, it's going to throw you for a loop.
Yeah. And I like the section there when he starts talking about, I mean, particularly this is where I got tripped up, especially when I was maybe learning DAX initially, was evaluation context. What is an iterator? What happens when context transitions happening? And then what happens when you expand a data table? So there's some core identifying what you're doing or what you're trying to accomplish with your calculations and linking those to what you're trying to accomplish in DAX, I think was a big hurdle for me. And once I started understanding what I needed to build in order to make it work correctly, that was like a huge win for me when I was learning DAX.
Yeah, I like their opener. It's great. You know, the moniker of Alberto that he apparently stole from a student, which I love, is, you know, DAX is like, what does he say?
DAX is simple, but it is not easy.
But it's not easy.
Yeah.
Right. And then in terms of clarity, right? Number one, like straight out of the gate, DAX is a functional language.
Yeah.
Right. So very mathematical and analytical. I have one part of that and I suck at the other, which is why going from SQL, where I was, to learning DAX was probably one of the most frustrating experiences of my adult career. Just hands down. Less so than MDX, mind you.
Wow.
But just in terms of, because in one of the things that's highlighted, and I think a little further down, but it's part and parcel of functional, is I came from the business side. So I knew the data of the business and I learned SQL on my own, reading and doing, but it was easy trial and error because I could see the results of the data and know whether or not my query was right or wrong. Mm-hmm. And an additional thing in a SQL statement is super easy. It's like it's a where clause or it's I'm grouping by the wrong stuff or I just didn't have the right join. And it's really easy to figure out just looking at the result, like how am I on the right track or off?
Yeah.
And I think at the end of this, we'll get to the, like, what are the recommendations we would have, right? But
sure.
When you go from that type of language where everybody knows select star from table, right? And you could say everybody knows some whatever in DAX, but moving from a very, I don't know how you would describe it, verbose or conversational language, mm-hmm, to a functional one is a big leap for people. right? And that's where I think a lot of people that we've talked to, whether it's in an interview or in general, that come from the SQL world, there's this assumption that like, oh, they're just good at DAX as well. And it's like, no. Like what they'll tend to do is go back into SQL to figure out their problems totally on a row by row level because yeah, they don't like DAX.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So I think it's straight off the bat. Like if somebody had said, Seth, fundamentally, when you're going to learn DAX, here's what you need to keep in mind in how you, you know, think about it, I probably would have approached the learning of it in a different way that would have been less frustrating right out of the gate.
Yep.
I think
and probably a lot of people too are coming from Excel. It's either SQL or Excel that you're coming from that probably you're introduced to DAX for the first time. This kind of also goes back to our previous conversation about training. And to me, this is a perfect statement where like there's really no amount of formal training that can master you in this concept and like without the experience of reading it correctly. One of the best things that I think he said in here is at some point your brain's going to start to read functional languages. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the perfect way to like really put this is it's not so much about, I know what calculate does. I know that it accepts a table, but being able to, again, like look at a statement, more or less, not even write it, but look at it, understand what it's trying to do, what it's applying to.
Agree.
That's experience. And you can only get that from experience.
I think it's the, for me, it's like that point of what happens when it gets to understanding? When do you understand it? And so like, I feel like it's, so I would like to, you know, change the phrase in the beginning of the article. It's, you know, DAX is simple, but not easy. A phrase that I've used a couple times, I don't know where it came from, but I can't give credit to it. But I would say it's DAX is easy to start or easy to learn, but difficult to master. And so I feel like there's like the learning curve. There's actually a pretty easy learning curve, especially for people coming from the Excel world, because I'm already used to thinking in formulas. I already have that is a functional language already. So I'm very comfortable there. And so having sums, it's when I start introducing the concept of like iterators and virtual tables and what happens when I'm doing this context transition and implicit versus explicit, see what I threw in there? Measures that are available to you inside the model. Those are the kind of things where I was like, oh my gosh, my head started hurting a bit more. And to your point, Tommy, it's the experience of kind of like working with them a couple times and having that core knowledge build up to you like, okay, now I understand why I'm doing it the way I'm doing it. Would agree with that wholeheartedly.
I'm wondering whether or not subliminally you were reading the chat at the same time.
Oh,
or Sandeep and you are on the same page because
he literally
wrote that out. Like, yes, you learned difficult to master.
I feel like I've said this before or written this before. Like I know I've heard it somewhere. Like
I don't know why I'm just inspired.
I'm inspired, Sandeep. Inspired, thank you for inspiring me. I didn't even see that until just now. Like thank you for catching that one. But yeah, I mean. I think when I teach DAX to people and I'll go through like a class and I put a curve on an exponential curve and it kind of flattens out at the end. And the easy stuff is like creating measures, doing some sums, simple aggregations, all that stuff is fairly easy. And then what typically happens, I feel like in the DAX experience is you jump up very high on this learning curve till I need to go to like context transitions. And that's when we start talking about, you know, percent change over time. And you have to be able to say, okay, what is the current context of this data point? And I need to shift the time period a month ahead or a year behind, or like, that's the stuff. Those context transitions where people are like, what the heck are we doing here? What is actually happening? And so I think those are the moments where you have to like really understand what the DAX is doing, because now you can understand, okay, what is the context transition? What is the filter context of this single data point? And then know how to adjust that filter context.
One of the things I love about this article in general is part one, what like set the stage, DAX is a functional language.
Yes.
Part two, practice, right? Like know nothing else about it. Like, how do you get better or understand this language at all? And it's practice. And it's not the same type of practice that I was talking about, where you understand data and then start like trial and error kind of thing. And if you, this is where I think dovetailing from, had I read this or had it sink in when I was learning DAX myself, is this is one of those things that you really need to go in and look at the language and figure out the syntax and what those things will do before you start going and applying it to things. Because the initial challenges, if you think about when we started, or even in the AS editor, back in the days, you didn't have variables, like you didn't have ways to carve up the little different pieces to figure out whether or not the whole of a combined, you know, DAX calculation was working as you would expect. Where I think we have some of those like easier methods now, where you can break apart each of those pieces and see that it's working. Because one of the challenges I think they lay out later on is you just get a result, right? Mm-hmm. At mm-hmm. the end, it's like you got to figure out where you're going. But yeah, this kind of speaks to you're not going to get good at DAX unless your day job is like,
yeah,
almost doing all in DAX, yep, or doing DAX all the time. And it's very reflective of, if you're not continually practicing the activity of writing complex DAX calculations or keeping your head in that mental space, mm-hmm, you're going to lose it.
Yes. Like
you're going to lose, yeah, the things that you learned. And I know this because for the most part, I don't write much DAX anymore, you know, mm-hmm, and it's that, like, it is.
It's a muscle memory.
Practice,
use it or lose it.
Absolutely. Yeah. One totally of those things you have to keep alive.
Yep.
And this, I think, is way more similar to actually trying to learn another language, not necessarily coding, but an actual like foreign language than it is to learning SQL. Because SQL is easier, where like if you haven't 100%. Done it in a while, you can Google search it. You can pretty much apply it pretty easy.
Yep.
But DAX has actually been more similar to when I was learning Italian. Because I would talk with my dad, he would say something, and I'm like, I know what I want to say, but I don't know exactly how to say it in Italian. So then you have to do the research, like, oh, I'm trying to say past tense. Okay, what is it? And you're trying to go back that way. And when I was practicing every day, I was really beginning to like pick up things quicker, like, you know, over time, where not yep. necessarily where I knew more, but when a new concept was introduced, I could understand it better. But now I would have to go back in a sense. Yes. To the start.
Yep.
DAX is very much like that.
This is why you have foreign exchange yeah. students. Like when you push people into other cultures, or you go over yeah. to other, like go live in Italy yeah. for a year, like, you'll have to learn the language. You just, because right. you're going to use it every day. It's a very yeah. similar concept.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I guess I feel like they're all of these reasons are kind of intertwined, but yeah. in the same way with like any language, like in my case, Italian, there's important concepts before you can move on.
Correct.
You can't just implement or say something advanced without kind of understanding the back end or like kind of the theory behind it.
Totally agree with you there. And I liked in the article, particularly around reason number two, it was around, if DAX is not your daily job, if you want to get better at it, you need to carve out time, plan it, mm-hmm. plan the time to go do a little bit of research or build some things in DAX. And so I think this was actually one of my earlier mentalities. And when I, again, my introduction to DAX probably wasn't really DAX. It was in Excel trying to write formulas in pivot tables, which is way, I think, more complicated than, let's like MDX yeah. DAX
a calculated
stuff.
Field?
Or... Oh, yeah, calculated fields. Not very intuitive, way more intuitive. And I think once I got to like, oh, Power BI, DAX, oh, this is easy compared to what I was trying to do. So I felt like there was a hurdle that I was getting over in the beginning there. But I really like this, the concept of, if you don't have the ability, or if you're not writing DAX all the time by report building, try to make sure there's deliberate opportunities of where you're experimenting, playing with, learning DAX pieces of that. I think that's really good. Let's move on to reason number three. There are a few important concepts. How would you guys feel about these, you know, the four kind of key concepts that are called out there? Do these resonate with you? Evaluation context, iterators, context transition, and expanded tables.
Do they resonate? There's been a lot of sleepless nights because of these.
Oh, have you ever dreamed in DAX? I've dreamed in DAX.
Only dreamt in Italian. I've woken up because I figured out something.
You dreamed in Italian DAX? Is that, you know?
Italian DAX.
What is some in Italian?
Some. I didn't change my computer language yet. I'm not there yet. So I actually wonder.
You know, if you did that, you would probably learn Dax faster because that's where the Italians are.
Yeah, it's probably super easy in Italian.
It's probably super easy.
If you change your language settings in Power BI, you're like, oh, I figured it all out.
It all makes sense now.
But no, I mean, these are concepts that, I mean, literally, I've had nights where you're struggling and I would just wake up going, what if I tried this? Not even I figured out the answer, but just trying to get a certain number to show up in a total. Where everywhere else it's right, and in one place it's not, and you're just racking your head, you're never going to figure it out. Or you could figure it out, but you're never going to understand it and then reapply it if you don't understand, again, these concepts, mm-hmm. with especially evaluation context. This is the one that is hard to understand, almost harder to explain. Mm-hmm. You know, when if you're introducing someone to Dax and you're like, evaluation context, I usually say, we'll get to that.
Yes.
Because it's true. It's true. Like, that's not one of the first things you tell people when the more you learn, this is something you have to focus on, but not yet.
If I had to put those in order of things that I felt were easier, I felt like iterators were pretty much easy to understanding what that looks like. And I think there's some pretty solid examples of, you know, you're trying to just calculate, you know, multiply two things together and then add them together at the end. You know, that multiply add, you know, pattern is very commonly known. I'm doing sales times number of products sold, and then I need to add the total up to get the total revenue. Like, it's a very simple concept, I think, to get through people's heads. Context transition, I think, becomes a bit more complex.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of debating, like, which one would be number two for me, whether it's context transition or evaluation contexts. And I guess if evaluation context would be more around filter context, right? So I think
you need to know that before context transition.
I think you're right. And I would say, like, I like to explain that by showing like a graph and a table, mm-hmm. and side by side, and saying it's just showing the same data. And then, okay, can someone tell me, like, if I circle a number on this chart, what is the filter context of that single data point?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what that means. Because I think when I describe this to people who are comfortable in SQL, it's like, hey, this is like having a dynamic where clause on all your statements, right? Typically, I'd have to write, you know, for each row of this data, I would say, you know, group by or something in SQL. But what's happening here is I can change that entire column. And so now my group by statement can be an entirely different column based on product or category or sales region. It's dynamic now. So that's changing for each row of this data. That is where the data is, the where clause is kind of dynamically always adjusting, which I think is really cool. But also for the SQL developers of the world, it's very foreign to them. They don't understand. Like, that was a very different concept because I'm used to writing out a very, you know, specified SQL statement, and that got me my answer.
Yeah, the things that stick out to me, you know, especially coming in from practice, right, is these four areas are, if you invest the time early and practically engage in DAX and get these things to work for you so that all of a sudden these concepts like light up in your brain, it I think sets you up for figuring things out in the future, even if you're not doing DAX on a daily basis, right? Like, you need to, if you don't invest the time up front to engage in each one of these to understand how they work, you're never going to learn DAX. If you mm-hmm. do that hardcore enough to get to understanding these core concepts behind just a thing you're writing, I think you set yourself up for success later on. But like, DAX is one of those where you need to invest early or you're not going to get it.
I like the bold statement they have here towards the end of this section. Yeah. Do not stop working on a formula just because it works. That's pretty important there because I have built stuff that changes when the filter context changes or a different category or stuff shows up. I'm like, why the row level works, but the total doesn't work. What am I doing wrong? That's when stuff, you're like, you have to understand exactly what's happening in those formulas.
There's nothing worse than like trying to look at something. I don't know if that's right. Exporting it and then doing like the actual calculation in Excel for like the total. You're like, wait, look, where's that coming from? Like, if you're doing, yeah. And no, it's true because you have to be, and he says it in the article too, but you have to be curious. Like, why is it doing it? Practicing with intent.
Yes.
I think one of the, this is also bringing up one of the most challenging areas of anybody who's working, right? Is when you build something and you get the expected output, how often are you going back and refining something?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'll answer, like, it's probably not often.
Or performance tuning, even for that matter.
But when you're working with DAX, like, especially when you've been struggling, you're like, yes, I got the answer. You're moving on.
Right.
But yes. I think I'm the point done. Here is, if you don't fully understand all of the different pieces, right, of how you got to your answer, or if there's a different way to come up with that answer that's more efficient, mm-hmm. that's where you'll learn more, right? But I also think in general, regardless of whether or not you're learning DAX or something else, like, that's where you take the I can do a job or I can figure out a problem into I understand how this stuff works. Mm-hmm. Right. And I like where Alberto and Marco always push people, which is you want to understand how this is happening, because once you understand the fundamentals of like the calculation you're putting together, it'll serve you better in the future when you're trying to accomplish something else. But so, love the theory in there, right? Where you're pushing people to refine what they've, you know, gotten the right answer for, or refine, you know, that take the next step is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my favorite, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Tommy.
No, I was gonna move on to the next one.
Go ahead. Yep, do it.
Just because I love this one. I don't know if this is my favorite, but it's basically reason four is DAX is strongly logical, if not just really as logical as it gets, because that practicing with intention is so important here, because, you know, it's DAX is going to do what you ask it to do. And I think that's sometimes the most frustrating part, where I think a lot of people, they struggle with the totals, or a lot of times it's time intelligence. Usually it's a time when someone goes, hey, that number, why is that number here? Like, you know, 15,000%. And you're like, I don't know. And then you're going through it. And when you understand why something's outputting the way it is, even if it's wrong, I think that's sometimes that epiphany moment. Like, oh, I see. It's taking this. It's making a virtual table here. You know, what's that that context here? With knowing the foundations. But yeah, one of the things he says here that I probably love the most is, like, you know, starting with intent, where you, rather than just saying I'm trying to get a number, is starting with a actual statement, like a business statement, and then going through each of the steps to try to get that output. You know, like saying, I rather than like I need to show the number 1500, it's like, well, no, like I need to show year over year, you know, based on the same time period. Okay, let's go through the steps, let's go through the knowledge that I have. Is it outputting the right thing? It doesn't work in different ways, but understand that logic and try to translate a business need into the technical side is, I think, one of the best skill sets, because you can apply it not just in a single report or a single measure, but then you can understand how you can apply that to other situations.
I agree.
The thing I liked about this section, you know, is kind of twofold. And actually, I'll start with recommendations after, like, coming out of this. One yep. would be, this is a reinforcement of being really methodical with DAX, right? One is, you know, be methodical, or figure out what the steps are that allow you to help build a good calculation. And then at the same time, when you're trying to triage a problem in DAX, be methodical about the approach you have with understanding, like, where the breakdown is. But one of the really key parts of this section, I think, is it's really important as you start to learn DAX, where you go into like, hey, this is really easy. Some I know calculate, yay. And then all of a sudden you crash and burn on something, that you find a problem that you really want to solve, right? Something that's really cool to you that is going to take you past the frustration and like doggedly put you into this realm of like, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to like look up these concepts, figure out what calculations I should be using, break this up. And the risk reward or the work you put in to get to that result is so worth it. And where you push against the bounds of trying to understand a lot of these new concepts. And one of the things that did it for me was when I built that dynamic time matrix. Mm-hmm. Like DAX and time was not something that was clicking for me. And I saw one of the coolest things where somebody was built in Excel, like everybody has a single row and then they start going by like the days and then they start rolling up things by month and then quarters and then years. Mm-hmm. And I thought the coolest thing would be like, man, like I'd love to do that in that, like in Power BI, mm-hmm. and just have a matrix that shows me all that stuff. And that took me into the darkest hole of you know, DAX that I've ever encountered, but it was fun. Like at the end of the day, I had seen a few things and learned like some parts of DAX. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, I think conceptually I should be able to do this. And then you go down a route. Right. So I think finding the fun thing or the thing you really want to output is important in like diving deep into the language and sorting out a lot of the concepts and things that are really going to stick with you going forward.
I think this is, interestingly enough, inside the article, it talks about, I mean, particularly around four, DAX is the logical part, bolded in there. Think about DAX as if it were a game. And this brings to mind the games that Phil Seamark would build around DAX. The stuff he was creating was, what the heck is going on here? Like, the things he was able to produce in there was absolutely incredible. He made a 3D game. Like a Doom kind of like run around this world and see things in 3D rendered in HTML visual, but all of it was built on top of DAX. And he really approached the problem as, I'm building like a game. It's a game to me. How can I understand more deeply about what it's doing? So really, it's very interesting to me. This really tickles the right parts of my brain, being able to pick apart code and see how it's building things. I think one note here for me around this one was using variables in DAX was huge for me to start understanding what is happening inside that DAX statement. And one of the things I think that was really hard for me was when you're creating virtual tables or you're calculating something, you're calculating a table that you need to go aggregate on top of or do an aggregation over that. That was challenging. What is that table producing? So one of the things I think is like challenging here is, and as a measure, you're producing a single data point. And you could be baking tables, you can be filtering data, there's a whole bunch of other things you can do to that information, but the output is a single data point. And I think that's the hard part of what's going on here, is to understand how do you boil down this complex multi-line DAX statement into something that I can understand and produce that proper one data point output.
I think this is one of the things that people can get frustrated. It's like, oh, DAX is logical. I think what people don't understand is DAX may be logical, but it might not be the logic that you have yet. And this is when I love to, in a sense, reverse engineer, look at samples or resources from the community or blog articles.
Sure.
Like something, especially yeah. that for every article that Marco Russo has, usually he has like a downloadable file that yep. has everything in.
Yep.
Like, especially like we're dealing with calculation groups. We'll dissect someone's like complex Power BI sample file to kind of reverse engineer and then understand the logic of how it actually got there.
Correct.
And I think that's, to me, it's not necessarily how we logically think, but as they said before, you know, there's a mindset and a way of thinking and being able to understand, you know, rather than what you're trying to do, but what someone's done and yep. then break it down, for me, is one of the best ways to learn.
I agree with you 100% on that one. And that's the downside of DAX. In Visual Basic, when I was in Excel learning coding, I could just hit record and it would just grab a bunch of code for me and it would track my clicks and every little click became a little event. And I could see, oh, here's what I'm doing. Here's how to select a cell. Here's how to select a group of cells. Here's how to paste and copy data. Like I could see code. I could see examples of what it was actually doing. And then I could start mimicking that behavior. And I think until now, there really hasn't been a good way of you sharing DAX code, because, I mean, even when you look at the SQL BI stuff, you're using their sample data set. It's not inside my code. Donald from the chat. The VBA is dead. Long live VBA. I love it. So that just totally threw me off there. So totally dig it. But I think for me, like, that's something that I like, to your point, Tommy, I like watching what other people build, but there's not a good collection of like what people have built. There's not a good central place to go get it. And I don't think there's enough examples that, how do I transpose what SQL BI is doing into my data model? Cause I might have something slightly different.
That's
kind of the challenge right now.
Right. And you can't create a repository for all this because everything depends on the model. And we've had the conversations about this. So it's only as good as your model. And with custom visuals, or especially the first time we've really talked about DAX, where you just can't have one entire, you know, repository. Here's all the different ways to apply it, which is great. But for you to understand it, again, everyone has a different model with different relationships. So it's like you have to have this folder of all these sample files and open each one up.
It's a little bit clunky that way.
Jake
from YouTube has made an interesting comment that I think is also very relevant. How you model the data will impact how complicated your DAX becomes. And I think that's also another game that you play. There's an interplay between, you know, good data modeling and easy to consume DAX. And I think there's also, like, as you become more versed with building data models, you introduce another concept here of like the thin report and the data model. So when your team gets large enough, like which measures, like you have this concept of like the thin report, which you can create measures in, and you have the concept of a data model. Where do you put those measures? Which measures belong in the thin report and which measures belong in the data model part? So there's also like some strategy around like, where's the right place to put all this stuff? You probably don't put visual formatting measures in the model. Maybe you do if they're used in multiple reports. I don't know. But like, there's like some other, you know, deeper thoughts around like even just organization of your data model. Where does that stuff go?
One of the most interesting to me, and maybe it shouldn't have been, things that hit me was at one of the conferences where Alberto and Marco were speaking. You sit down and these are the DAX guys. You go on their site and they solve really complex DAX problems. They break them down for you really simply. And the thing that blew me away was them going, the most important things in DAX is for you to spend a bunch of time making your model really good.
Yeah.
It's like, because everything downstream from that gets really complicated in DAX if you don't do the modeling right.
Yes.
Right. And that was... It was definitely a focus in like the right direction.
Yes.
And where I think a lot of people don't spend enough time, which is why I love that comment, because if you're in the gnarly DAX realm, maybe you should be reevaluating your model.
Like yes, exactly.
How your tables relate to one another.
Yes.
Because like you shouldn't have to do that all the time.
If you have seven dependencies and seven different measures, maybe it's time to sort of rethink your base.
I mean, sometimes just adding one calculated column in your data modeling solves a lot of your problems. Yeah, I mean, seriously, I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've written this really complex DAX thing. It's like, I think it's working. I'm not sure if it's right. And then I'm like, oh, well, if I just added one more column to my dimension table, that solves my problem. Or, I mean, and sometimes I'll build, you know, there are times when you need to actually return real data. Like you might create a calculated table somewhere to test out something, figure out that's right. And then once you figure out, oh yeah, that was what I wanted, then you can go back to the modeling side and build another table and bring it in. Cause you can do stuff like that.
Yeah. And we know it's not best practice to always create calculated columns, but I think we're all faced with the decision. It's like, well, I could spend 7 hours trying to figure this out, or I could spend the next 30 minutes creating one calculated column and just making this a lot easier.
Right? You better darn well
you
sure
don't
that when you
learn it.
You better darn well sure before you check that model and you're removing that calculated column. I don't want that calculated column in my data models. I get,
yes, you don't really
for
learn
testing,
it. I guess this
for
goes
testing purposes
the,
only.
For testing. Yeah. Temporary solution. Yeah.
Temporary solutions, yes.
We'll add it to the technical debt.
Yeah, that would be one. I mean, Seth and I worked on projects where that's been like our number one, you know, hit is like, look at all these models. Where are their calculated columns that we don't need them to be? That should be something that's pushed up in the upstream stuff. No problem. Just go make it move it somewhere else. So that's one of our checks. And again, that's why you use more elaborate tools like Tabular Editor that can do these kind of checks for you. Like, hey, these are mm-hmm. bad practices that we're seeing inside the model. Change these four or five things to make a better model for you.
One of the things that struck me in the double is in the details section.
That's number five.
I know.
But moving on to number five.
I don't think that people realize just how nice it is to have the filter icon on the object, on the visual object on the page to just be a reminder that you have outside filter contexts.
Filters have been applied. Object. Yes.
Dude, I distinctly remember how many hours and how many times we got tripped up on that stupid thing because, you know, you forgot that you put something on the page.
Why is this calculator wrong? Why is this,
number wrong? Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, wait, I had a filter to only one customer. That's why it's so small.
this is the one to me. And actually, this may be my favorite or maybe the most important. Because this is the one I think we've all had the oh crap moment where you share a report and someone's like, I don't think the total's right in the table. You're like, yeah, why wouldn't it be right? And you export it and you're like, oh crap. And that's that first realization that could actually occur, that for whatever reason you could total up a table, but your total's actually not going to equal the rows. That idea the first time, one, is mind blowing, and two, you got to figure it out. That's when you know you're ready for the next step because you have no other choice. But I mean, this is such a huge one because again, this is really, whether it's that informal training or if you're doing actual, or reading books or actually doing Marco Russo's classes, this is one of those things that again, is just probably the most frustrating because DAX is not going to give you an error. It's not going to say, hey, this number is not right for the total. Yeah. It works.
Yeah. Like you'll get on number.
Asked it to do. This is not, yeah, it's not going to, there's no error saying you wanted a total for the table and it's not equaling up.
And this also brings a good point. You have to be a little bit,
hardest part, yeah.
You have to be a little bit aware of what's going on mm-hmm. because you actually have to make sure that there's like a fact checker kind of in your back mind, right. Like, okay, I just did this math. Does this actually make sense? And so I do a lot of, particularly when I'm building like the model and thin report portion, like I'll have the model and then I'll maybe have four or five or six pages in the model that are just a couple visuals to spot check mm-hmm. my math on some things. Like, okay, I'm doing this calculate. Does this seem to make sense? Do the sum of the parts equal the whole when I write this calculation? Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, let's move on. Like, so I'm doing a lot of dummy checks for myself to say, does that even make sense? And maybe even a couple export to Excel and then
sometimes
do a couple manual sums
or
write the equation out. So you know that for a fact, this is the expected result that I'm trying to get.
This is especially true with time intelligence because this 100%. Is usually when it occurs where you're doing it like a previous month. You're like, is that right? Mm-hmm. You know, like that percentage, like, I think, or and depending what date column you're using. Like if you're using certain date columns, a card will just show blank. It only works with a date context, which and again, these are all those little details where again will lead to a lot of frustration, but you have to have that mindset of that discovery and that why.
Yeah, agreed.
Oh, we have gone there in the chat, gentlemen. I'm gonna raise my favorite topic ever. Natural language DAX.
Oh boy.
To a theater near you. Work.
This is just proving to me that it's not gonna work.
Well,
write a calculation.
I think what it does is it highlights some of the fundamental big challenges around DAX and people conceptualizing and being able to get it right. And then you throw in a model on top of that, which affects all of these calculations and how they work together or what are the things you can and can't do. And it represents that it could be a train wreck, but I'm on the side of going to be wowed, right? So is it going to hurt or help people understand DAX? I think it depends on how it's implemented, right? If it's mm-hmm. if it's an afterthought and just something that is, you know, flashy, it's going to be a waste of time.
Well,
if it actually,
if it turns out like Q&A,
actually is utilizing, you know, or helping people conceptualize
yes.
some of the pieces of DAX, I think it could be extremely helpful. Even if it doesn't get you there all the way, all the time.
Correct.
Like bridging the gap between the functional and, you know, natural language or way in which most people think, I think it could be a huge benefit to people using the tool.
We're 3 months away.
Well, so here's where I think, you know, what you said to me, Seth, resonates very well. And I think this is what I would liken to when I hit the record button on the VBA inside Excel, code would just kind of pop out for me. I didn't have to write it. It was just kind of there. Now, granted, it wasn't always perfect, and I had to usually tweak it or learn some more about it, but at least I got some of the core concepts down. And I think potentially this would accelerate that early part of the learning curve for DAX. I could use this natural Q&A thing. It would then write DAX for me that it thinks it I want to present. And again, if we think about like the patterns, like this is why DAX patterns exists from SQL BI, because there's a lot of common things you're going to try to calculate over and over again. Mm-hmm. And one of my kind of comments back to Microsoft was, I write a lot of the same stuff. Like you're always writing measures about things, like sums, right? The first thing I do when I create a model is I go through and say, figure out, okay, here's all my columns. Here's the ones that are numbers or numerical columns. Which one of these should be sums or counts? And I go through, or averages, right? And I go through and I will hide all the numerical columns, and instead I will replace them with actual measures that do an explicit calculation for those things. And I think that kind of stuff is a waste of my time to type sum, add a description every single time for every single column. That's wasteful. I want that to be automated and faster. So if this new quick measure things, or you know, the Q&A stuff, if I can have this stuff auto write a portion of this or auto generate part of the model for me, that's a huge time saver. And I could go look at what code is written and use it.
That's why it charts up there in my star and thing I'm looking forward to, because impact wise, it could have the most significant change to how people interact or new beginners use Power BI.
Yeah.
Right. Because fundamentally, everybody's seen the hockey stick graph, right? Like how
the usage
how
learn, is going
like
up.
The learning of DAX. It's like, yay, this is the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Except
hard.
It should be like goo. You know, like there's a cliff there.
Yes.
And you don't fall, well, it is a mountain. You don't fall off something and just learn DAX. You have to climb
work
incrementally.
It up. Yeah.
And if this helps you because it's the guideposts, like you're saying, if it gets you 90% of the way there, does it mean you have to skip all these concepts? No, I think it actually throws you like face first into the concepts a lot harder.
Yes.
Because it might be building things that are outside your understanding of how you would build them. But to your point, once you have a representative example, it's an easy step or an easier step into figuring out how you would layer, you know, a DAX calc.
And I use today, I mean, when they came out with quick measures, I use them a little bit. I see what were they writing? Oh, look, they're using these error statements in here. How are they capturing errors? Or look, they're checking to make sure there's only one item selected in this column because this calculation only works in that one area. A rolling 4 months of data? Great. That's very helpful to see how they wrote that expression. You're going to be doing rolling averages and rolling sums. Just give me the example of the basic one and help me interpret it into my data model.
So I hate to disagree here. I know, but I'm actually can't wait. But I think the hardest part for me to think that the natural language is going to be 90% of the way is because DAX doesn't understand, or it's not going to be plug and play where I can just open up the natural language, start typing my business need, and it's going to output. Quick measures is still more or less a template that looks like DAX, you know, because you're still filling in those parameters. But the natural language, like we're trying to translate usually like a business need, like we need, global accounts. What's a global account? What's that different logic? So you're still in a sense, either going to have to be writing this complex statement in this natural language, or there's going to be some configuration for it to understand your model, or maybe it works with Purview where you have a business glossary. But the thing is, our job is translating someone's layman's term of what they're trying to do, and then in a sense converting that to a DAX statement.
Well, and also, I mean, another a similar experience I'm aware of is the same concept around, like, inside the Power Query, you have columns from examples. I like what that does, right? It, mm-hmm. I don't want to write complex M to parse out some kind of something from a text phrase. I want to just explain. I just want to tell the program, here's the two columns I'm looking at, and the third column needs to have this format of information. And the computer figures out, oh, I'm going to break it on this breakpoint. I'm going to take the first three digits of this. And it writes a really robust, you know, example that I could get behind.
Now that would
be, I really use that a lot.
Right. Now, if you think about it, if this new natural language, like processing kind of thing for DAX, works in that way, right? You mm-hmm. start typing, here's what I'm trying to do, sum by this, whatever, and then it gives you
auto-complete some stuff
of the outputs.
Maybe,
like, you know your data, you yeah. know what the result should be, right?
Yep.
Oh, I want to pick. Yeah, it's 45. It's of the five selections you're giving me, it's this one.
Yeah,
that could be cool, right? Because how else is it going to figure out, like, which calculation you really need without surfacing up some sort of exam? No, but think of, like,
yeah, that
all,
would be,
it, all
yeah.
it needs is the bounds.
Yep.
Right? Like, you're starting to type these things on this data set.
There's only,
like,
so many patterns you can follow.
Here's the selections that I'm calculating and filtering down as potential solutions. You go pick the solution. Right. Yeah. Like, yep. and all it needs is to be is, like, yep, that's the percentage. That's the one.
And it shows you the output next to each. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That'd be sick, man. So it's not just picking the calculation for you, it's picking the outcome, which is what people want. They, like, I'm trying to sum this over 12 days. Does it look like this? Yep, looks like that one.
So if they don't come out with that, I know what tool we're building.
Well, I mean, so I think what your comment there, Seth, turns into really good for number six, right? So regardless of however this thing turns out, is you do need a good editor, right? A good editor for DAX, I think, is extremely helpful. And, you know, I think DAX Studio is a very solid editor. But my favorite editor by far is Tabular Editor 3. I mean, it is absolutely mind-blowing. You can look at equations. You can look at measures and say, show definition in line with your existing code. Wow, it just really enhances my experience. So if you haven't looked at it or tested it out, definitely go check out Tabular Editor. I think it's another very solid tool that is out there. I love the DAX.do environment for, like, testing and planning and experimenting with things, because it comes with DAX.guide, which is by far the best documentation I've ever seen for DAX. It is miles ahead of anything that Microsoft has produced.
And those are both SQL BI products, right?
Yeah, the DAX.do and DAX, yep. Yep, DAX.guide. I highly recommend those. And if you want, I mean, go pick up Business Ops from Power BI Tips website, and we have links to DAX.do right in that tool. So you can actually add in your desktop, you know, a hot link button that goes straight to that website right from your external tools ribbon. So that would be something.
Yeah, and grab. So basically, DAX.do is the online version of DAX Studio, right? With the
yes,
embedded model behind
correct.
The scenes.
Correct. Yes. So that's what right. my only comment there is. It so gives you a like data
that,
model. And
if you like that editor experience, yeah. right, that's also a third-party tool you can download in the Power BI.
And the thing that we like.
DevOps,
yeah,
or data
business ops. So yeah,
our own product. I don't even know.
So, I mean, that's a really. I mean, I think that's a very strong point. Is the DAX.guide and DAX.do actually play very well together? Because DAX.guide says, "Hey, here's a calculate function, and you can click a link that takes you over to DAX.do, where you can see that calculating statement running on top of a Contoso data model." You can say, oh, look, this is like a venture works. And you can then modify it, tweak it, change it. And then, oh, that's how it's working. Oh, I see what it's doing here. And, like, so that's good. As long as they would just put the commas in the front of the line, we'd be good. Had to throw that one in there.
I honestly, though, like, Tabular Editor 3 is, it's hard for me not to open it anymore.
Oh, yeah.
The work on things.
it's like my go-to workshop tool for anything. The only thing I haven't quite figured out yet is like partitioning and how to reload partitions using Tabular Editor 3. I know it's there. I can refresh stuff, but it doesn't quite work how I expect yet.
Me too.
But other than that,
I'm a little worried to try it in a few different ways where I'm like, I may break something or corrupt something.
Yeah. I love the scripting part of it. So we talked earlier about like, hey, what happens if I wanted to select these five columns and make a sum? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's my gosh. The scripting of that thing is absolutely incredible. If anything Power BI Desktop needs, it's scripting of writing DAX. That would be 100% needed. The fact that I could select five columns, create a measure for each one of them that's doing a sum, and then automatically add a description for each one of them all at the same time and put them all in the same folder, that's huge. Oh my gosh.
And this is on the roadmap for Tabular Editor, but they're going to have the C# IntelliSense.
Oh, nice. That will be very helpful.
I'm looking forward to that way more than the natural language.
Well, we have it. So Tommy and I and Seth all contribute to a number of like repos on Power BI Tips to help you with this, right? We have a whole Tabular Editor scripts. I think we've got almost 50 scripts or maybe more than 50 now. We've almost got 50 scripts on there for people just who've written really interesting things. It's super helpful to script out all the stuff. It's a great library of, you know, other people writing good scripts or examples of scripts. And again, I think you're right, Tommy. IntelliSense will be much more helpful to know like what parameters can I put on top of all these different properties at this point.
Goodness.
But it's getting better. Like, man, do you remember back when this stuff came out and there was none of this? There was like no DAX Studio. There was no Tabular Editor. You had to write every single formula like one at a time. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
DAX Studio was around.
Well, I didn't know about it. So it was like not even existent. No, but no one knew to use it. You couldn't integrate it with a data model.
Yeah, they jumped into supporting Power BI pretty heavily, which is to the benefit of the community.
Totally.
For sure.
100%. 100%.
I think to round things out, right? I think the last two points of the article, you know, ultimately, just a reminder, trial and error does not work.
It won't work.
And learn the fundamentals. He closes the whole thing out with practice. Fundamentals of DAX, right? Like with any language, with anything, the discovery, the learning to understand something as opposed to just get an output will serve you better in anything that you do in life.
Totally agree with that.
Specifically, DAX is one of those that forces you to do it in that way.
Another great article from SQL BI. Really like this one. I think all of their seven reasons why DAX is not easy, spot on. You can tell they've taught this to thousands of people, and this is the culmination of all that information coming together in one article. A really good article. But one thing we should probably wrap up here is we should probably each give like our one or two, what do we do? Like, so we've learned DAX to a degree. We're probably not experts or ninjas as called out in the article, but like we've done our fair share. For those of you who are starting out new, what would be kind of maybe your recommendations? What would be one or two things you could do now or something that you have part of your routine today that help you to get better at DAX? Kick it over to Seth. Maybe give us some one or two items.
These are the same things we recommend all the time when we talk about DAX, right? Start simple, break down the different pieces, use a table, make sure you understand each of those things and the results that you're expecting are being returned before you start layering and variables, man. Like it's another quick way of just taking those bits and adding them into the larger equation as you start to, you know, maximize or build that out.
Yeah, I would say for me, it's that reverse practicing with intent rather than just trying to solve one particular number, but going in with a particular, problem you're trying to solve for and trying to go as you're going through it. If you're adding variables, if you're doing time intelligence, trying to understand what is DAX actually doing? What is the virtual table or kind of like what's happening on the back end? And then the other part is try to reverse engineer as much as you can. Look at the amazing community on community.powerbi. Look at the amazing leader or MVPs out there who have all these sample files, download it and just try to, in a sense, like go through like, okay, why did they add that type of function?
I would say I'm going to try and go a little bit different route here. A lot of good people have written some DAX things, and actually there's some tools coming into the marketplace, or especially external tools that I want to point out. One of them is Side Tools from Dieter, who is we've partnered with. It's part of the Power BI Business Ops External Tools package that you can go get. But what it does is it's actually a DAX generator. So we were talking earlier around how cool would it be to select multiple measures, or how cool would it be to do repetitive DAX things. DAX generator does this. You can actually go grab code from the community that people have generated, this DAX stuff works, and you can then interpret that and put that into your data model by selecting columns and measures. So I think there's some really interesting community-based tools that are starting to spin up here, and particularly around, actually I have the YouTube article here, so I do a quick video explanation around the world's fastest DAX. And so this is basically looking at the library of DAX templates that are out there and then quickly injecting them into your data model. My opinion, this is what Quick Measures should have been originally. Never really turned out to that. Quick Measures kind of got locked down. We couldn't add our own. But I think this is a very helpful tool, DAX generator, to help you quickly get through and build new measures quickly and learn from other people's code, I guess. With that, I think we've pretty much wrapped it. It's about a little over an hour now. So with that, we appreciate everyone listening in, tuning in. The chat has been very insightful. Thank you all for participating in the chat. It's been a lot of fun watching your comments. Our only ask, if you're watching the podcast, if you found value from this, if you enjoyed the conversation, please just share it with one other person. Tommy, if you're looking for the podcast and you're not watching live, where else might we find it?
So you can actually find this podcast anywhere they're available. If you're watching live, you can subscribe on Apple and Spotify and anywhere podcasts are available. If you're listening right now and want to watch this live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central, to subscribe to future episodes, to make sure that you join the conversation, just follow Power BI Tips on YouTube and LinkedIn.
Awesome. Thank you guys very much. I learn from you every time. This has been always a lot of fun. I appreciate it. Have a great week, and we'll see you again on Thursday.